Ian noted in this sacristy before we came out that this is one of my favorite passages. The letter to the Galatians is a magnificent document. The great Karl Barth called it the testament of human freedom, because it has that wonderful line, "For freedom, Christ has made us free." What does that freedom consist in? Well, he amplifies it in the rest of the letter. Bruce Lawrence, our one-time guitar player who's moved to Toronto, won the gold medal as an undergraduate in anthropology at Western, and he's been in Korea for a long, long time, trying to work on a doctorate in linguistic anthropology. And he said to me, the distilled wisdom of anthropologists, "The basic human tendency is tribal. More than anything else, we are tribal." What does that mean? We want to look around and see everybody looks just like us, thinks just like us, feels just like us, and then we're safe. It's the ultimate form of safety in numbers. But from what I think is a deeper perspective, the more is at stake in just the security seeking that we never cease doing. Because out of that same situation, social situation, comes one's sense of who one is, identity. And that's pivotal. That goes to the very heart of every human being's life. Who am I really? And so tribalism answers all kinds of important questions. The quest for security. But more profoundly, I think, the quest for identity. Because if we're true with ourselves, I don't think any of us would say that, "Well, I really know who I am." So the tribal impulse supplies that answer. Jesus could be understood as a great de-tribalizing figure among religious heroes. De-tribalizing, and it's expressed very succinctly in this passage from Galatians that I just read. So Paul looked around at his society in first century Roman world and looked at the most crucial, critical, pivotal distinctions that can be drawn between people. I'm a Greek, you're a barbarian. I'm not a slave, you are. And then, of course, most astonishingly in that world, there's neither male nor female. I mean, we still haven't climbed out from under that incubus that's haunted the human race for millennia and continues to. Women still make 79 cents on every dollar that men make for doing exactly the same work. And that's in our enlightened North America. Women are routinely trafficked, as everybody knows, little kids, big kids. And often enough, nobody raises a hair. My sociology teacher in high school, of less than happy memory, said, "Women should be kept barefoot and pregnant." So there. The three K's, Kinder, Kirche, and Kuchen. Children, church, and cooking. Those are the jobs for a woman, And anything beyond that is unthinkable. So I think it takes a fair amount of imagination or a fair amount of consciousness of our own civilization to see where women are still subordinated to men. How many CEOs are there in the business world? The U.S. may be on the verge of making a major step forward after having elected a black president. Now they may get a woman president, although Indira Gandhi was around for a long time, that great Jewish lady, that tough little Jewish lady.
Golda Meir.
Oh, Golda Meir, thank you. Yeah. There have been 18 other women leaders in the world, and we're bringing up the rear. You know, the States is bringing up the rear, and we still have yet to move to that point. We need a transformation of imagination. You know? We need to be able to look out of our eyes and see the world in a drastically different way. That's what Paul is addressing. That's what Jesus was all about. I mean, if you read the Gospels carefully, there are all kinds of situations in which Jesus fraternized with women. Remember the last week's reading, this woman who came in and washed his feet with alabaster and kissed him endlessly on the feet. And Simon the Pharisee said, well, if this guy really knew who that woman was, he wouldn't let her touch him. Well, women are essentially loose. We all know that. They're sexually voracious. You know, just fill in the blanks. Of all the kind of degrading statements we make about women. And that's our world, you know. That's our world, I think. It has the advantage of making us safe, of giving us a sense of who we are, but at what cost? The cost of excluding everybody who's not like us. It's very simple. They're the wrong color, you speak the wrong language, your eyes are shaped improperly, blah, 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 and so on and so on and so on. And we have this ghastly thing in Florida where this guy will come down and murder 50 homosexual people, because that's been called the last great bias in our society. And this was not an anomaly. You know. Gay and straight. I was going to put that into the Pauline reading, but I thought I would use it for now. Gay and straight. Pope Ratzinger, of less than happy memory, would talk about homosexual people as objectively disordered. Think about that phrase. They're wrong.
Nobody in this room believes that.
Well, I hope.
Nobody does.
I hope. But what has dogged me since this massive murder in Florida is to examine myself. Where are vestiges of homophobia in me? And like sexism, I think it is a kind of hidden thing. In any case, when I can look into the face of any other human being and say, you are my sister and you are my brother, and absolutely no boundary separates us. That's what Paul's talking about. When he says, for freedom Christ has made us free, what is it to be free, ultimately? To be free for the other. To be free from one's own endless self-aggrandizing tendency, which always excludes the other at one point or another, I think. And the church is, in fact, God bless the internet. I just read a blog. I'm not even sure what a blog is. But a bishop in Florida said that the Roman Church has contributed massively to the homophobia of human history. It's not that they used to burn them. You know? What goes into burning another human being? That's the ultimate extrinsicization of the other. That's the ultimate pushing away of the other. This, by destroying them, so they don't exist anymore. Then I don't have to worry anymore. So I agree with Vince that we are a kind of unusual group in this room, but I still would insist. I astonish myself at being a sexist at times. I raised 3 black sons. I astonish myself. Every once in a while, I'm aware all of a sudden there's a racial bias here. But we can't expect Marcello or Judene to do this because, after all, they are black, as we know. And then that moronic guy in the sociology department, Western, who said, Orientals have big brains and little genitals, and white people have mid-sized brains and mid-sized genitals, but black people have huge genitals and tiny brains. PhD, University of Western Ontario. So all I'm saying, I'm issuing to myself, first of all, the warning that I do not so readily assume that every conceivable vestige of alienating other people is absent from our. And this is not a dictate. This is a suggestion. For me, first of all. Because I've been astonished over and over in my life to find out, oh, Trojak, you're not sexist. Oh, Trojak, you're not racist. Oh, Trojak, you're not homophobic. Then something happened. And spontaneously, this nasty aroma arises from an experience. So we need to know. The great Stanley Hauerwas said, the great enemy of Christianity is not atheism, but sentimentality. And the older I live, the longer I see, and the more I appreciate the wisdom of those statements. We want a feel-good Jesus. Everybody does. I mean, it just pervades. I was talking to a born-again Christian lady, wonderful lady, who is homophobic to the core. And she does not feel any kind of discrepancy between her deep devotion to Jesus and this. One of the popes, it might have even been Ratzinger, who said, you know, homophobia is a graver sin than anything that homosexuals can do with each other. That's pretty strong. That's pretty powerful. So, for freedom, Christ has made us free. Be able to walk naked and unashamed, as the Genesis text has it, before everybody else. So finally, this of course entails that sort of depressing remark that Jesus makes about losing your life and finding your life. I think the losing of your life has much to do with these unacknowledged or unseen biases that we employ in our lives, which distance us from each other. So, we're called to greater life. To greater life. I have come that they may have life and have it more abundantly. I mean, I appeal to your experience of mine. When have you ever felt utterly safe with another human being, even if it's transitory? Or even more remarkably, with a bunch of other human beings. There's no question, but there's this massive sense of liberation. However transitory, however short-lived, it stands like a great meteor. This is what it's all about, folks. This is what human life is supposed to be all about. To live that way. So, and that's no sentimentality. You can't sentimentalize the cross, I don't think. but the death to all these inner boundaries, which constitute my identity, which constitute my security. Jesus was clearly not just conventional, but radically opposed to many of the social gradations in his own world and in ours. So we need to keep our eye sharply focused on what Jesus was really all about, not to make me feel good, but to make me free.